Hey everyone, this is Gopher Set Deck, and I'm your host, Shayna Worsham. Today we have part two of Conrad's episode. We're going to be talking about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and our experiences on it. So stay tuned for that. A couple things that I just want to get into before we start that episode with our lovely Conrad is it's about to be holiday season. So I just wanted to wish everyone happy holidays. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving and Indigenous Peoples Month. I also want to bring up that November is National Adoption Awareness Month, and there are different foster care programs that you can donate to in your areas. So if you're in LA, I believe the company that's easiest there is Raise a Child. And if you're in Atlanta, Atlanta Angels is a great one. About 400,000 kids grow up in the foster care system nationally. And that's a statistic that's from a couple years ago. So I'm sure those numbers have changed. But it's something that is very tragic and hurts my heart a bit. So I figured I'd bring it to the attention since it's the holidays and we do a lot of donations or volunteering, and those organizations could always use some help, whether it's monetary donations or if you volunteer your time. All things are appreciated. So you can find them on both programs on Instagram if you feel so inclined. And I hope everyone has a great holiday season and enjoys this episode. Since you function slightly separately from the set deck department as a whole, because you're with shooting crew and set deck is normally prep and wrap sort of functioning a little bit, what would you say that your normal interaction with the set decorator and with the lead man are?
It depends, but normally I'll meet up with those with the set decorator on the first day of a new set. And she will talk about what's important and what they might think will, you know, might come up and be, you know, whatever the script says is, you know, important for us to display or have available. But most of the time that I'm dealing with other dressers, or sometimes the lead man will be there in place of the decorator just to give me the rundown of what needs to happen. And you know, if there's something that needs to happen at the end of the night, like covering something or making sure, like this last show, we had a bunch of PlayStations and electric bikes. They were like, just make sure this stuff is like put away so people don't walk away with it.
Right.
And, you know, stuff like that, you know, that I'll have interaction. But a lot of times I'm just kind of on my own and we'll text back and forth. Or sometimes if I have time, I'll call them if there's an issue that needs to be resolved between that some information they might have that the director needs to know or the ADs need to know. But I'm usually like kind of flying by the seat of my pants, and I know the gist of what needs to happen. And then they'll just be like, all right, we want to, usually it's unspoken that we want to see our set dressing in this set looking nice in the proper context. So, that's pretty much always unspoken.
Right.
But sometimes they will talk about it. But a lot of times I'm working with people I've worked with before, so they know that I'm there to make sure they look good. And I love seeing the set dressing. You know, my wife hates watching movies with me because I'm like, look at that chair. That I had to move it three times. And I'm hiding behind that tree over there. And, you know, she's like, shut up. I'm trying to watch a movie. If I worked on a movie, she won't watch it with me because you know I can't help it. I gotta be like, well, you know, that's like not real light over there. That's a lamp they put in. So you know, but I'm usually just kind of on my own. And like I said, when it's a new set and there's something they want to tell me that you know might be an issue or director might think is important to be, you know, documented, and then they might have some notes for me. But for the most part, it's just like, hey, make it look good. You know, what's supposed to be there should be there. What's not supposed to be there shouldn't be there. And, you know, because a lot of time I think the decorator and the lead, they kind of want to get away. They're like you, because when they see things start going crazy And things start changing. They just want to walk away and like, hey, you know what? I don't need this stress on top of what
I'm like, Conrad, you're up.
Right. 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 So, and I make it a point not to bother them unless absolutely necessary. I'm not the type to be like, well, did I move this chair or can we do this? I'm just like, let me make it look good and get the best of what I have available and put it forth for the cameras or the director to check out. And I've been lucky, knock wood, to be able to maintain and, you know, like actually be progressive, you know, where I could be where people want me to be their set dresser because they know that I care. And I think caring is the thing where you have to draw a line. If you care about something, you care about your job, that's 90% of it. You know, my dad would say, if you shoveling SHIT, you be the best, you know what, shoveler out there, you know, and that stuck with me. And me and my brother, I like that, you know, whatever job we have, we, you know, and that shows, you know, you want to be intensive because in this field, I can know guys, a lot of set dressers, for some reason, on set dressers become stuntmen or move to camera or move to another department or try to do other things. And, you know what I'm saying? And it becomes where you kind of good at this and kind of good at that when you just intensity always beats out, what is it? I forget the word, but just spreading yourself thin, you know? So yeah. When you just focus on that one thing and just become good at that, that usually makes you, you know, like shine more than trying to be good at 20 different things.
Yeah. In Eric West's podcast episode, he was saying that the worst thing that he comes across is apathy in his coworkers. So when you just lose that drive and you just don't want to be there anymore, he's like, that's a real mood killer. And it sucks because then it drags down the energy of the whole team. And so caring is so important and just not find a way to turn yourself over from that mindset, I guess.
You have to almost take it personal, but not to the point where you're causing conflict. But you have to see it. At the end of the day, my name is on this work. So I'm going to make sure that I'm creating a place for myself in the future by doing good work. So
absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. Do you normally get prep and wrap days when you are an on-set dresser? And what kind of responsibilities do you have for those?
Usually we do get prep and wrap day, but that's usually just like the day to have fun on the clock, you know, because I hate to say that over because, you know what I'm saying? Somebody's going to hear this and be like, I know he was doing that. But usually, you know, unless like they want to bring you in and have you read the script and stuff like that on a prep day or a wrap day, you know, but usually it's like just a day to come in and just kind of get your bearings and see the set. And there's a meme where they got the guy, the Dave Chappelle crackhead, and he's scratching his neck. Like, got any more of them prep days? You know what I'm saying? It's just, most people don't do, they get the work done in the morning, and then the rest of the day, they just kind of chill out, you know? And so it's good. I think it helps you when you move, especially into a new show, you get that a little time. And then for wrap day for me, since I'm just my kit, you know, I just throw it on a car. Sometimes the company will deliver it to my house for me. So it's usually not doing much for a wrap day because once if not filming, I don't have anything to wrap out and except for getting my tools back home. So, you know, but, you know, it's usually like, oh, get a prep day. Yeah. You know, I get to go shopping on your dime. So, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, I had a prep day when they were like, well, we'll throw you in with the other dressers and let you work the rest of the day until 12.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't want to do that. You know, I just want to go.
Like,
I want to go home. And but, you know, it's cool. You know, I know everybody's different.
Yeah.
So, when you know, they think of it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And continuity photos and stuff when you finish a show in your wrap.
Oh yeah, yeah. But usually I try to do my photos as
you go.
We go just so you know they have everything done. So in case something comes up or there's a reshoot or insert shot they need or you know second unit stuff, you know I try to be good about uploading my stuff. Now everybody uploads. It used to be thumb drives and, you know, like printing out. You know, I was actually, you know, on the cusp of the Polaroid era, you know what I'm saying? Because there was, cell phones weren't exactly how they are now. You could take phones, send messages everywhere, email everybody. It was still like, just kind of like the Nokia phones. Yep. And so people still had a digital phone. So we would have the little SD cards and our digital cameras, I meant to say, and it would be the SD card or I was doing Polaroids there for a minute and holding on to like a stack of Polaroids and like putting them in a little book and on taping them to paper and being like, oh yeah, this was this set, you know. Which is funny. Like I hadn't even been in it yet. I mean, I started, like I said, in 07, started doing set dressing. So, you know, it was still like, and walking the line, that's when the smartphones kind of, I think the first iPhone was like 05 or 06 or something. Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't like, you know, and we were still using digital cameras, I remember, in 2013.
Yeah, same.
You know, like, and it was still like, you know, even pulling out your phone to take a picture, they were like, what are you doing? Are you taking personal pictures? Like, no, this is what I use because my digital camera batteries are dead. It was always something I would break them all the time. So I would end up buying like 3 or 4 cameras during a show because, you know, you're moving around, you got it in a little pocket and you're trying to work on set and, you know, there's all types of environments. So, you know, they get damaged and you end up like buying different, a bunch of cameras.
Yeah, I was still in that era too when I first started because I started in 2009 and I had to buy the digital camera and we were still looking up directions on MapQuest and moving
printing LA them out.
And driving all over LA. I'd have to plot out my day on MapQuest and then print it out so I knew how to get there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Read directions while you're driving is like the dumbest thing in the whole world. But then I got a GPS a year later and it was
had like, to do it.
Yeah. It was the GPS would take you like the actual GPS, not a GPS in your phone.
Yeah. Like TomTom like, or whatever.
TomTom that you'd plug into your car and it would take you to like 4 different locations before it would take you to the correct location.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like an El Segundo and my boss would be calling me like, where's lunch? And I'm like, I'm in El Segundo. I'm so sorry.
Right? Like, I don't know how I got here. This is where the GPS took me.
Oh, it was so hard. And even to this day, I think about that because Polaroids were just, they stopped doing them right before I started buying in LA because I know a lot of my bosses still wanted to take like print photos. They wanted me to take photos with disposable cameras and get them printed. And I was like, we're doing a commercial. Like I have to do all this and then I have to go get it developed in an hour. Like this is, it's so much.
Like what? Okay. It's like, how do people do movies before smartphones? You know?
I know. And now I'm like, my life is so much easier, especially with AirDrop. Are you kidding me?
Oh my God. Like, right.
A queen with AirDrop. I'm like, it's gonna take 20 hours to download these 5,000 photos.
Right. Man, yeah. No, it's the good old days.
Yeah. But I will say we did get more prep time because of those factors. So now it's like expedited schedules and you know all the normal problems. Well, I know that you worked on the first Black Panther, and I also worked with you on the second Black Panther, but we met for 2 seconds, and then you were off to your world, and I was off in mine. But it came out, Black Panther 2, which, congratulations, it was great. Thanks. Very beautiful.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience working on it?
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say it was really awesome to be able to do the second one. It was kind of like this whole, unfortunately, there was an air of missing Chadwick and like, how is this going to turn out? And was this even right to be doing this, you know, without, you know, like, to move forwards, because I got the call to do the movie like 2 days before they announced that he had passed away. So it was just like, literally it all fell apart. Like they were going forward with it. And then it was like, oh my God, he died. You know, like they didn't even, like the Disney people didn't even. So it was like, that's how crazy it was. And so we didn't think they were going to come back with it. And then I guess they decided, you know, finally, I think that it was that next May, I think they came back. And that's when they started filming and decided to move forward with the new script. And so, you know, it was amazing. And like, you know, everything went wrong during the filming. You know, it was COVID. Everybody caught COVID. A lot of the stunt people were getting COVID, and you know, it was like you couldn't have certain people on set, and I remember like we were filming at Tyler Perry, and in some buildings you couldn't get a signal, so mm-hmm. when you would order lunch, like you couldn't, it wouldn't come because they would be like, oh, it didn't get submitted, and you'd be like, oh man, I'm hungry, you know. It was just like so many things went wrong with that show. Like stuff that they ordered was like coming in broken, like a lot of those pots for Chalicanil, you know, they were like, they were still like wet clay. They were being made in at such last minute for the movie. And it was just like, it was great to be a part of it. And, you know, and that whole mythology, especially in the Black community, you know, like having a positive movie about scientific and, you know, royal characters, you know, like that's not typical,
right?
Movie. So, you know, and I think that part has always been great. And so, you know, it was just that pride you feel in being a part of that. And then I think that made me be like, there will not be a water bottle on this set. I'm gonna make sure there will not be a speck of dust. Because I want this movie to go out and be like something that's absolutely magnificent, you know? So every time, not that I don't do that for all movies, but right. I'm also being a comic book person myself. And, yes. you know, and I was like, this movie, above all, even the fact that I got the first movie, I don't know if you know Scott Johnson, he did Marvel movie. Yeah, He started on the Iron Man's in North Carolina, because that's where he was from. And he was the on-set director for like all the Marvel movies, pretty much. I told him 5 years before they filmed Black Panther, like if he ever got Black Panther and he needed his assistant, just to call me. And he decided to become an actor when they filmed the first Black Panther. And he was like, you can have it. That was when he left doing Marvel. And when I came in, they were like, who are you? You know, we got Scott Johnson. We don't know how you work. And, you know, they were kind of like standoffish of me because they hadn't worked with me, man. And I showed them, you know, and now we're all great. And I do all the movies for those guys now as an onset. But, you know, in the beginning, it wasn't that way. And so, you know, I had to kind of prove myself to be worthy. And shout out to Scott Johnson and bless him, you know, because that skyrocketed my career. You know, and I just, you know, like I said, for this movie, I always want to make sure that, you know, it's impeccable. You know, like everything comes across amazing and beautiful. And, you know, and just to tell that story again, especially mm-hmm. with the loss of Chadwick Boseman, just, to, yeah. you know, like it was even more of a responsibility to make sure that the movie turned out well. So. And from what I hear, it has, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, of course, every Marvel movie gets its own backlash, and there's always critics that say stuff about it. But we watched it at the premiere, and I was really happy with how everything turned out. And you wouldn't know that there was so many issues that we faced during the year of filming.
right. If people only knew.
I know. There was a lot of hiccups, and you can't tell by the final product, which is great. And yeah. I love how involved Chadwick's memory was with it. And he was always mm-hmm. still number one on the call sheet, which brought tears to my eyes when I started on day one call sheet came out. Oh, got me. That's really special.
Yeah.
What set was your favorite?
Oh, what's it? Oh, I was, as a lot, I liked them all, especially anything in Wakanda. But this time around, when they did the Talika Neal underwater set, where it was like part land, part water, and you know, and it was like all these glowing sea creatures and these glowing liquids all around it. And it was just like, it took you out of the world and you were in this alien space. I think that set was really, you know, and the way they lit it, it was really amazing, you know, and I like the fact that literally the actors would go from water and walk onto dry land to do their mm-hmm. filming, you know, like literally submerged and would come up and, you know, do stuff. So I thought that was really cool just to have that transition and, to, you know, have the two mediums of land and water together. Right. On a set, you know, and I as a set dresser, you know, you kind of appreciate cool stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? And there was, I had to make sure that the water was clean. So I had like a bunch of pool nets, you know, pool skimmers, and, you know, and then, you know, of course, making sure the land was good also. So that one was really cool and really fun to work with. And the foam, the people that create the foam. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people in your audience have talked about this on your show before, but those people are absolutely amazing with the way they can create stuff out of foam and the way they paint it. And all the stalagmites and stalactites were like perfectly incredible. Shaped. And they look, you couldn't, if you didn't touch it, you couldn't tell that it wasn't a cave system, real cave system, you know? So shout out to those people because they do such amazing work and it's just like mind blowing. Like that should be an Oscar nomination for that. Those people like who do that type of art. Cause that is seriously like, I'm blown away every time. And I've been on multiple sets with that stuff. And it's just like, I'm just like, hey, shape this out of foam. Like how do you even get this deep level of detail?
It's the crazy thing is that set with Neymar's hut on the top of it was all built from scratch. So it was built around a tank. And then so you have the water in the tank and then you have all this land that they've built up and created and all of the stalagmites and stalactites that they made out of foam and painted. And then there's greens and plants to make it look like it's real earth. And it was crazy to see it come together at the last minute. And Molly and I had gone with the decorator, Lisa. Molly was the other buyer. We went to this store to get a bunch more nautical stuff for the set. So like, it would be like he was collecting things from the above ground world, even though he hates the above ground worlds, but he still collects things and is like,
yeah. Awesome stuff. Yeah. I remember that. It was like mines and,
I know. It was
Depthometer, whatever measurement things to measure. It was very cool. It was like the wheel from a pirate ship, you know. It was really, it was, you guys did a great job on that set. My head is off because it really put everybody in that world. And, you know, we were like Atlantis, you know.
Yeah, it was a group effort. It took all the departments to make that one. It was really, that was a special one for sure. And the gang bosses were really proud of it. It was really awesome. No,
you should pat yourself on the back for that one. It was really detailed, really good. Really good work.
Yeah, that definitely team effort. It took a whole village of people for that.
Yeah.
Were there any challenges that came up during filming for you guys?
Since the movie was supposed to be filmed during the summer and there's a lot of people in the film that like the Atlanteans didn't wear clothing. So, you know, they were hoping that filming in the summer, it wouldn't be an issue for them to film people who are like running around in swim trunks. and we ended up having to film it in fall and winter. And so everybody would be bundled up and eating pads and hot hands all over their body. And then when it was time to film, they had to pull it off and do the performance. And they all did great, you know. But, you know, it's just you felt for those people having to deal with those conditions and still have to perform and act like they're, you know, they're okay with freezing temperatures. And like some of those films that filmed at night with those Talican attacking the vibranium detector and the naval ships and all that stuff. And it was freezing out there, and they had to be out there with fans going and water being splashed on them, so their bodies looked like they just came out of the ocean, and it was like brutal. And it was just challenges that arose from the postponement of the movie, you know, in the days that we weren't supposed to be filming.
Or
seasons that we weren't supposed to film.
Exactly. And there was so many sets that we prepared for multiple times. And one of them was the market scene where see in the actual movie. It's so funny how quick it goes by, but it was, we had to get so much produce for that market.
Oh my God. Yeah. I remember having to throw away produce because it would rot and buy more. And they would just have trucks of produce just standing by, and we would have to deal with it. A lot of times there would be flies and bees, and we just have to like do them away and like turn the fruit over into the from the rotten side to what looked kind of okay to be able to film it. And that was a lot of work. That was like weeks and weeks of work. And like you said, it goes by in seconds in the filming.
Seconds. And we had thought so hard about it. We were double checking all this exotic stuff that we made sure was proper things that you could source in Africa. And so you have this that you have to get all these specialty items from. And then you're like, so I need like $30,000 more of that. And the guy's just like, what? And I'm like, can you have it here tomorrow? Also, can you get a code so you can deliver it? You're just like, oh my God.
Like, what? Like, oh my God.
Crazy.
Talk about throwing money at a problem.
I know. And it was, I don't even remember why we couldn't shoot something that day. Just the schedule changed. So everything that we had prepared for was going to move to 3 weeks later. And then it was even hotter when we shot it. So everything died even faster.
Yep. Yeah,
it was wild. Yeah. With so many special effects happening on such a large movie, is there anything that changes for your job?
You know what? It doesn't change, but it like increases the difficulty level. The special effects are like, they're good at blowing stuff up, but they're not that great at resetting it and making it nice again and clean again to film. So a lot of scenes, like in the scenes where Namor attacks and they're blasting him and in turn blasting the fruit market behind him and sand and all this other water's flying up and the fruit is getting blown away. And then they're like, all right, take two and then take three, take four. So now you're like trying to repair all this stuff in the moments you have between takes and make it look proper again so they can just blow it up again. But, you know, that's the dance that special effects and set deck does every movie. So it's challenging when it's like, oh, my God, can we just call it a cut and call it good and not do this over again? But at the same time, that builds character and, you know, it makes you tougher. So, special effects, I know, is a difficult job and, you know, they have a lot to make happen and to make it look real without using actual dynamite.
So
there's a lot of respect I have, especially if I wasn't a set dresser, I would do special effects.
Yeah.
Because that's how much I think it's just a cool gig, you know? Just being able to do that type of stuff, explosions and fire and wind. You know, like that. I think that's just a real, really nice job, you know. I think with all movies, special effects, in the scene where the Royal Tribal Council Room is flooded with water, and then she goes into the dream sequence, and on top of the water, they put flames going all across the floor. So just imagine trying to move through. And here's a funny thing, like they put Conrad Physics on my clearance for the monitor. Because in the earlier scene, there was these huge rocks that have broken apart from the destruction caused by Namor. And since there was so much water coming in, what was supposed to be these huge rocks were floating because they were made of foam. So they were like, Conrad, these the set pieces are floating. And I was like, yeah, physics, there's foam in the water. Foam and water, that's physics. So the video playback guy over my name, because we had to put our name on our Q-tape, which where we could watch the monitor through. So, you know, in case a picture shows up in mainstream media, they'll know who leaked the photo. So anyway, right. They put Conrad Physics on me because he got a good laugh out of me telling the first AD, yeah, physics is going to float. But what I end up doing is I started anchoring all the stuff down with really long screws, or tie it off to other larger pieces to make it not float. But that was challenging. That was very challenging because as the water hit, it would loosen that attachment up. So after a while, I would have to put longer screws and more screws and heavy stuff on top of stuff to make it stay down. And it was like, and I think the art director was, the art director was even like, sorry. They came and apologized to me. Like, I didn't realize it would float so easily, even though this thing weighs like 100 pounds, it's still like, you know, this much water involved, you know, it's going to float. It's supposed to be tons, you know, because it's a huge piece of rock, but you know, we managed, and, you know, it looked good on film, you know, made it work. So, you know, but yeah, you know, it's always like our stuff has to last. Like when the water hits the city, the triangle, you know, our set dressing just went flying. We literally had to pull the set dressing out to keep it from killing people. And they put in the digital set dressing because, you know, if those chairs would have went down the street with the stunt. And background actors there, they could have got hurt really bad. So,
yeah, there was a big moment too when we were thinking about, because obviously we knew that it was going to flood. That was in the script. We knew it was coming, but it's also Wakanda, so you have to make sure that the set dressing looks right for the universe that you're creating, which you can't just magically go to Target and buy a stool and have that stool work. That's not how that's gonna go. So we had all this specialty furniture, and Lisa and Molly had done a lot of really hard work on that even before I had started. And we got to closer and closer to the day that we were flooding, and they came in with that huge, I don't even know, like hydroponic, crazy giant gauge. I don't know what to call it. Some crazy gauge, and that's the thing that was going to push all this really heavy water and flood. We were really flooding the set. There was walls in place to anchor everything, and so we were talking about, you know, all these fake plants that we were going to have and fake flowers and stuff that could be debris that's going in and floating inside the water with everyone. And then they were talking about when the system needs to drain, that they can't have anything block the drainage system, because that would ruin huge hydro Goliath.
Huge pumps.
Yeah.
Huge pumps. I got like five of them.
I know.
20,000 gallon pumps.
Huge. They are massive. And so all of those things are just factors that you're trying to figure out. And you're like, how does set dressing play a role in not hurting someone, number one, and not clogging this very expensive system that we have no control over. It was a process.
There was a lot of screwing things to the floor multiple times that would just get ripped out. A lot of stuff was just, we just had to, you know, just attach it to something, tie it off. A lot of baling wire tied to things, and, you know, just to keep from killing the actors. You know?
Right. Yeah. Which
it was interesting, though. Yeah.
A lot of respect for your in the moment problem solving there, because that takes a lot of creativity.
No, I learned a lot from that set. You know, I did. You think you've seen it all in however many years you're working, but it's always something new to learn. So, that was a great experience.
There you go. Was there any other moment that comes to mind when you had to get creative with problem solving on the rest of the movie? I mean, you just listed a bunch, but.
The one, the thing I wrote down was during the scene where they're on the Royal Sea Talon, I guess the weather would make it so in the morning we would come in, the dew would make it really slippery. So would have like a whole team of people with like towels and leaf blowers and squeegees and push brooms trying to get all the moisture off the deck. So after we did that a couple of days, and somebody suggested we get a huge tarp and cover with a tarp. But then they were like, well, the moisture would still develop under the tarp, because what happened was the sun would shine and heat up the deck. And at night when it would cool off, it would just condensation would be there. And so that every day we filmed out there, it was just like, what are we going to deal with this morning? You know, sometimes we would get lucky and it would be relatively dry. Sometimes it would be like super wet and it would take like an hour to dry it off or to make it tacky enough for the actors to be able to get up there and work. And it was just a mess. And then they had to tilt it, you know, I don't know, you know, it was up on this huge gimbal thing where like there's a crane lifting it one way and it was going, man. And it was just like, just dealing with that every day was just like, that was really a challenge. And it was like multiple departments, like greens would come with leaf blowers. Construction would come with push brooms and towels, and then I would have a bunch of towels and paint. Painters would help out, and PAs would help out. People were just skating around with rags on their feet to dry off the deck, you know, because, you know, we were just doing everything in our power to make it work. Yeah, but it worked, and it all turned out great, and glad that everybody was happy with the end product, you know.
Yeah, that's a wild one.
It was tough.
What was your biggest takeaway from working on the movie?
I guess everybody dealing with what happened with Chadwick, and then what happened with Shuri and Letitia, you know, and Ryan Coogler, the director, having to like adapt and adjust to all of that. And I don't know if you remember, he got arrested for him of trying to rob the bank. And he showed up with his ATM card, put in his PIN. He's a millionaire, you know, literally did everything you would have to do to get your money out. And they almost arrested him for robbing the bank. And it was just like, and I just remember thinking like, Jesus Christ, you know, like this is of all the things, you know, like you go through on something, you know, and he was still humble about it. He never mentioned it until it came out in the news is when we found out, but it happened like a month before it came out in the news. And then he was still just like, so, you know, like poised and, you know, ready to work, just professional about everything. That I just thought that, you know, like, wow, you know, just great to be working for a guy like this and on a movie like this. So that was like one of the biggest things, like personally, that I went away with it. Like, you know, just to maintain your mental stability and professionalism throughout whatever happened, you know.
Right.
You know, and you know, if he could do it, you know, then people like us with way less stress to deal with to be able to do it easily. So.
To deal with actors alone, that's, to me, I'm like, I don't know how directors do it at the end of the day. That's a big task. There's a lot of different personalities that we have to battle with on set, but they have to deal with the personalities. And that's a whole other, gotta have respect for that.
yep, definitely.
All right. Well, we're at our last question. So do you have any tips, tricks, tributes that you'd like to add at all, Conrad?
Oh, well, I would say so, but then I don't want people taking my gig, because if I tell them my tricks, then they'll have my, no, there's really nothing to it. I would say to be a good on-set dresser, the main thing is to be there. Like a lot of times I will get breakfast, or, you know, I'll make sure that I drink my water and use the bathroom before we start filming, just because you being there is 90% of the job. You know, even if you don't have what it takes, just being there, assessing the situation, and then you can run and get what tool you need or whatever. But that's why I like to wear a lot of my tools on me, because or things that I might need on me, because on-set dressers, you have to be there. You know, that's literally your job, is to be there to make sure the set is good and sure that camera's good, and, you know, the director's getting what he needs, and, you know, and it's really a no-brainer, but that's hard. You know, most people need to step away, get a snack, need to step away, use the bathroom, need to make a phone call or shoot a text to somebody. you know, and then, you know, which a lot, you literally just shut your life down for 10, 12 hours and then, you know, make and do your job. And then after that, you come back and deal with whatever other things you have to deal with. But as far as onset, you know, it's nothing to it. You know, it's nothing I can say, oh, you better have this with you. I need this. Other than, you know, having a decent memory and actually being able to talk to people and not take things personally, you know, because a lot of times I think you take some person, like somebody sitting on a chair or putting the coffee down, knowing you just swept that area, or being able to deal, like count to 10 and then go speak to them like, hey, you know what? I don't mind you drinking, but just don't have it here. Or, I don't mind you sitting, but take your tool belt off and, you know what I'm saying, don't, you know what I'm saying, this chair would be better than this. I'll even bring people chairs like, listen, I know you need to sit down, but you should, don't sit on this chair. Sit on this folding chair, you know, because, you know, this is the set and we know we want to maintain it. It's right. Attitude is predict your altitude, as they used to say in elementary school, you know, it'll be one of those posters, you know.
I never heard that. I love it.
You know, attitude, predict your altitude. So, you know, like, it's all about attitude, you know, like, you know, and personally, you know, you have to deal with all these people and entitled people. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Make sure you know how to talk to them.
Yeah, that's great advice, though. Very great. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I know I asked you so last minute and you were so gracious to come on and spend an hour and a half with me, which I'm very, very grateful for. You brought so much good energy. So thank you so much, Conrad.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I appreciate you letting me be a part of this. And hopefully what I said helps people. And what you're doing is service to the film industry. And, you know, I'm sure you get your accolades. And I really appreciate you. And I know everybody in the film, especially in set deck, appreciates you, because it is like one of those people, like, you know, that whenever they give out like information, they like, make sure the grip electrics and camera knows nobody ever meant to set deck. You know, like, it's just like, you know, make sure everybody has their stuff. Make sure grip electric knows and that, make sure camera knows and da da da. But they never like, make sure set deck knows, you know, or props, you know, like the art department is just the redheaded stepchildren of the set. Yeah. But we're so important, you know.
We are. We bring a lot to the table, both literally and figuratively.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much to Conrad for spending his time and doing this super long interview. He was very gracious about it, and he's so busy on his new show that it was really great for him to take the time out and to do this. And I would like to ask if you guys have a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to Go for Set Deck podcast on Apple or on Spotify, because it helps with spreading the word of the podcast to other people on the charts. And it helps me because it's something you can do for free, and gaining a wider audience helps me in the long run. So yeah. And if you haven't already, check us out on Instagram, Go for Set Deck Podcast. If you want to send a hello or have any questions, I have an email that I respond to, which is goforsetdeckpodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Patreon account, and it's also linked in our Instagram account to a link tree that you can just click a little button and investigate further. So all very fun things. Have a great end to 2022, which is insane that I'm even saying that, because I feel like it's still 2020. Give us a pandemic and my brain can't get out of the year that it happened in. So yeah, have a great end of 2022. I wish everyone's families well, and be an exceptional fucking human. Goodbye.